Good afternoon. It's an honour and a privilege to welcome our guest speaker this afternoon, Robert David Orlovsky. Now, when you invite a guest speaker to come and speak, you know, it's always good to give them an introduction. You can sort of Google up, find their website, look for their bio. Professor, I don't need to look up and Google Orlovsky's biography. But way back, one of my rebbes, my learned in Orlovsky, for his legendary Ask the Rabbi sessions. Taught in the program for many years. He now, you know, he's been pivotal in NCSY in the States. He's been here in Israel now since I think 1988, and he teaches in many yeshivas and sends. He's legendary for his podcasts, and he's legendary for his yet unpublished sefer, but waiting to be, which will be the last book you read before you assimilate. I put outside in the back of Beis Midrash, someone came along and said, "Ah, Noah Orlovsky's coming. He's the one with the funny sense of humor." I said, no, he's gone with the American sense of humor. But truthfully, in a world today where really a low phone battery warning is the only warning people ever pay any attention to, it's an honor and privilege to welcome our Dr. Orlovsky today to talk to us and address us about the subject of technology. Dr. Orlovsky.
Thank you very much, everybody. First of all, for the benefit of the Americans here, my good friend Richard does not have a speech impediment, he's Scottish. For the benefit of the Americans, Scotland is another country. Yeah, it's like Canada, only smaller and colder. Yeah, so, and without as much personality as you can imagine. But anyway, no, many times we'd have conversations and he'd say to me, that might be true. I'll go with it. It is a privilege. This is my first time ever speaking in the yeshiva, and many, many times I've passed by and looked longingly as I was walking past, particularly on hot days, thinking I could stop in for a drink, but I don't know the code. So I just kept walking down that very, 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 very steep road, thinking to myself, at some point I'm going to have to walk back up that very, 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 very steep road. What goes down must come up, right? Anyway, so it is a privilege, and it is a pleasure, and I hope that we have siyata d'shmaya, that we can talk about some ideas that are going to be important. Because, as I always say, yeah, I have had the schus to speak to students all around the world, and from all kinds of backgrounds, yeah? People who've had 1 hour in a reform Hebrew school, you know, barely know anything, and people who have learned in the finest yeshivas and seminaries in the world. And yet, when I ask them this question, I always get the same answer. What was the most frustrating thing about your Jewish education? And they always say, it's not relevant. Not relevant. All of you must have remembered when you were learning Gemara towards the beginning, and at some point you ask the Rebbe, why are we learning this? Who cares? I don't run through the street with pitchers. You understand? If I marry a woman, it'll be with a ring, not with a piece of silk of indeterminate value. And if I divorce her, it'll be in base, and I won't throw a get from my roof into her chutzah where it catches on fire on the way down. Why am I learning this? And they're all right, because the search for meaning and relevance, I want to tell you, I'll tell you the word. I won't tell you the answer, but I'll tell you the word. Yeah? I had the schus to sit in Rav Moshe Shapiro's shiurim for a number of years. I would not be so bold as to call myself a Talmud, and neither would he. I know this for a fact. But anyway, he said something that was amazing. It says, "Lilmud manas la'asos," which means whatever you learn has to turn into doing. It's got to be a lemaisa. He says, that means everything you learn, every halacha, every pasuk, every chazal, you're learning it because what's the therefore? As we used to say back in Chavetz Chaim. What's the application? What do I do with this? And then he looks around the room and he goes, the second pasuk in the Torah, and he looks at us and says, what's the la'asos of that pasuk? I'm not going to tell you. But I just want to make the point that even the most obscure thing has to have relevance. And that's why whenever we're learning something, we don't have to do it in the middle of the sugya, but at some point we have to turn around and say, what's it teaching me? What is the message for me in my life that I'm supposed to walk away from this Rashi, from this Gemara, from this Halacha? It's got to touch my life in a way. Very important. And I always stress this because people have this impression that a lot of Yadus is out there. I have my life, and then I have my Jewish life. You know what I mean? I do my mitzvahs, I learn my Torah, etc., and then I do what I want. I have my own time. You know? And it's compartmentalized. Yeah? I put these things away. And it can't be. Because whatever we're doing has to be relevant to our lives. So there's one issue that I encounter a lot, and I'm sure you've encountered it if you haven't actually, you know, struggled with it yourself. And that is the concept of Dirabbanan. Especially when you're learning Gemara sometimes, when you come across the Dirabbanan and it says, we made this law because of this, and we think to ourselves, come on, really? Really? I'm going to go swimming and break off a branch, and I'm going to use it to float, and I can't go swimming. Nah, come on, come on, come on, you know? You know, a lot of things, we second guess them. One of the most profound lines that I've heard, and it's much more profound considering where it's coming from, Dr. Gerald Schroeder, who has two PhDs, one in nuclear physics and one in oceanography. The point being, he's much smarter than I am. You know what I mean? He said once, there's a reason they're called sages. You understand? These are smart people. The things weren't done, you know, randomly. People sat down and analyzed everything to get to the brilliance of the human understanding before we make a rule, you know? And I can't tell you how many times I have had teenage boys over the years that I worked in NCSY, you know, who said to me, ah, Nagia, it's a Dirabbanan, you know, because you know, I can hold hands with a girl and it doesn't mean anything. And I say, you are such a liar. What a liar you are. Not only that, when the Beatles said, I want to hold your hand, everyone knew what they really meant. You know what I mean? A bunch of guys see a girl walking by, nobody says, I want to hold her hand. You know what I mean? Who are you kidding? You know, the Chachamim understood reality. When they came up with the takana that a single boy and girl cannot be alone together because of yichud, when they came up with the laws of Nagiyah, my guess is that if you're worried about bias asurais, if you're not alone with the person and you can't touch them, the odds of that happening are much smaller. Hey, call me crazy. But the idea is that the Chachamim have a keen understanding and insight into people, and slowly society catches up to us. In the 1980s, the New York Times had a ethics column. I forgot the guy's first name. His last name was Cohen. My guess is he was a Jewish guy. You know what I mean? And there was a whole, well, for weeks, where this woman complained that she was doing business with an Orthodox man and he wouldn't shake her hand. You know? And he says, you're right, Rosa Parks. Rosa Parks in the deep south, sitting in the back of the bus. You know what I mean? Like, you know, that's what this is. You know? He discriminated. And it didn't matter what anybody said. He kept saying Rosa Parks. You know what I mean? I saw an article about a year ago, Kenora Reeves, some actor, yeah? So they were praising him because he takes pictures with women and he doesn't touch them. He stands next to them, doesn't put his arm around, doesn't that? Oh, what a mensch. What a youth, the Me Too movement, you know, he was machaven to it, you know? Straight up, we came over with it 2,000 years ago. You know, see, now you just figured it out. So you just caught up to us. You know, so when the Chachamim tell you a certain truth about insights into people, right, insights into reality, they're describing reality, and sometimes we don't always see it. You know, somebody asked for Desla. He says, Tzitzis, you see the Tchelis reminds you of the Yam reminds you of the Kier, you go to the Kizik, come on, who sits and makes all those associations? So if Desla says, when the halacha says you shouldn't look at women's clothing drying on the line, that one you understand. You understand? That you might come and make associations. That one you figured out. But anyway, so, you know, the idea being that, of course we make associations, of course there are things there. To pretend that something doesn't exist is nonsense. And so that's why they were called sages. They understand these things. Now, They have two things that they can do. One thing is called the gezeira, and one thing is called a takana. What's meant the gezeira? A gezeira means a fence. And what does that mean? That means if you're driving down the road and you hit a pothole and you break your axle, your first response is going to be, I'm going to sue the city. Why didn't they put a fence up around it? Yeah? When you're driving on many roads here in Israel and you look over the side at the dead drop, and I mean that quite literally, you think to yourself, why didn't someone put up a fence? The old road leaving Tzfas, you know, it goes like this, you know what I mean? Sometimes it doesn't even pay, you just hop from level to level down because, you know, so why isn't there a fence? Isn't that the responsible thing to do? Isn't that what you expect a society to do, to put up a fence? You know? So the Chachamim say, I don't want you to be over at the Arise. I don't want you to write on Shabbos. So I tell you, don't play with a pencil, because if you have a pencil in your hand, the odds of you writing are much greater than if you don't have a pencil in your hand. Is that common sense? It's a gezeira. And then there's a takana. What's a takana? A takana means to be metakein something. It's not a gezeira. There's a problem, right? Classic takana. Yeah? Nobody would ever forge a signature. It was unheard of. Remember that the Torah was written for good people. Can you misuse it? Can you abuse it? Is there room in the system to be able to twist things around? Of course there are. Of course there are, right? Any system can be abused. You can have a crooked cop, you can have a crooked judge, but the answer is not to do away with the legal system, you know? You can have the guy driving the Amtrak train texting and he goes off the rail and kills a bunch of people. You can have the guy in the Staten Island Ferry smoking up beforehand and smash into the dock. That doesn't mean get rid of boats and get rid of planes, get rid of trains. It means that you have to do the best you can to handle these kind of things to make sure that things run smoothly. But any system can be abused. The Torah was made for good people. I'll give you an example. Right? I grew up in Long Island in the 70s. New York, not like today, it was a dangerous place in the 70s. You know, I mean, like, you were afraid to go there. And especially, I was coming from the suburbs. And everyone knew that if you took the Line Railroad and you left Penn Station, you had a life expectancy of about 2 minutes. That was they sensed you immediately and they killed you. You know what I mean? That's how it worked. But, you know, when you go in, the crime was terrible. So what happens? A woman has a diamond necklace. And some guy grabs the diamond necklace and runs off. And they say, stop thief! Does that ever work? Stop it. Oh, okay. Anyway, they catch the guy. What's the halacha? This is the group participation part of the program. What? Give it back. Yeah, that'll work. Catch you next time, gal. That's the din. If you steal something, give it back. Why? Because we're working with the assumption that we're dealing with basically decent people. And basically decent people, sometimes they, you know, get a little sticky finger. Okay, you took something that doesn't belong to you, give it back. That's it, you know. That would never work today, because people don't believe in the common values. People don't accept the underlying principles to it. So a takana is made because situations change. So nobody would ever forge a signature. If I give you a shtar with two signatures on it, it's good. Comes along the chacham and say, guess what? Now people will forge a signature. They will forge a shtar. So we institute, and that kind of called kim shtaros. We need two people to identify the signatures to make sure that they're accurate. You understand? Because, not because the underlying principle changed, but because people changed and situation changed. And therefore, as things change, suddenly, you know, we have to adapt the principles of what makes Torah work and institute takonis. Now, sometimes it's a social problem, i.e., in the Gula times, second base of Mikdash, funerals were so expensive that it didn't pay to die. It was too much money. Might as well keep living. You understand? The cost of death can be the cost of living. It's the cost of death. So you had to get a sarcophagus. Yeah, this, that. Who could afford a funeral? So they would take the body and dump it in a field. So Rabbi Gamliel says, okay, Zalo Halech. So I'm the Nasi. Got lots of money. You know, you can go and see, you know, in Beit Shan, these have these big sarcophagi. He says, I'm getting buried in a Leonard Trout. That's it. Nothing for me. And that's how everyone's going to get buried from now on. Because expenses got out of control. So when you see there's a problem in society, it's the job of the Chachamim to make takanas to fix the situation. So when the price of spodiks shot up, so the Gary Rebbe called in the spodik merit makers and says, listen, Zalohalech, is that $1,000 for a spodik? He said, we can't, expense it, I'll show you the expense there. No problem. He says, if the spodik sell for more than $1,000, I'm taking mine off and putting on a hat. Guess what? Prices of spodiks drop. But that's because you have a community like the Hasidim where there's universal acceptance. We assume the Chachamim know what they're doing. There's a reason they're called sages. Yeah? And therefore they have the power to enforce it. Masha Engen, in the Litvisha world, yeah, by the traditional yeshiva community, prices of weddings were going out of this world. So the Gedolim at the time got together and made wedding takanas. You could only invite this many people. You could only serve this many dishes at the reception. You can only serve chicken, not meat. You can only serve this, only have this, only that. They made all these takanas, and then they added a line, unless the Rosh Hashiva decides that for whatever reason this is an exception. Guess what happened? Everybody was an exception, and the whole thing fell by the wayside, and people were still going bankrupt making weddings. Because they didn't put their teeth into it. And even if they did, if you don't have adherence, you don't have people keeping to it, then what good is it? What good does it do? You know? So a takana only works if you have someone like Dr. Schroeder who says there's a reason they're called sages. They must know what they're doing, and it's for the benefit of society. Okay, that is my briefest introduction. Yeah, I got much more to say. But I do a podcast, and I've done 200 of them. And if I've learned one thing, it's that I can talk for 200 hours without taking a break. Anyway, so I remember when I spoke in Australia, there was an old joke about a rabbi. You know, the rabbi used to give a 10-minute drasha, and 1 week he gives a 40-minute drasha. So they said, Rabbi, what happened? He goes, what do you mean? He says, you spoke for 40 minutes. He goes, I did. I didn't realize. I prepare as I walk to shul, and I just moved to a new house that was further away. I'm like, before I was to get there. So I was speaking in Sydney. I said, so it took me 14 hours to get here. And I've been preparing the whole time, so I hope you have no place to go. Anyway, but there's a lot more to say on this subject. But it means that the Chachamim of every generation faces those challenges. So when electricity came on the scene, hadn't existed beforehand, so Shlomo Zalman sat down and wrote a sefer on electricity. He sat down, learned the sugya, they discussed it, they went back and forth. When the first car came to Israel, he went and watched it and studied it and tried to figure out what, and then figured out the halachas of a car. So it's not that the underlying principles changes, but the metzias changes. So if the metzias change, so if you're smart, if you're a sage, yeah? So then you have to look at it and figure out what we do. I remember when TVs came out. I don't know when TVs came out, that's not true. It was in the 1940s. But everybody had a TV. I was born in 1959. I grew up watching television, you know? That's what I did. Both of my parents worked, they sat me in front of the TV, I just watched TV all day, you know? While other children in different societies were memorizing Mishnayos, I was memorizing the theme songs and commercials to every major thing that was on TV during the 60s and 70s, and I can still spout it back. Anyway, so this was it. You just sat and watched TV, and you know, all of them had to fight against TV and TV and this and that, you know? Yes, TV, no TV, you know? Vic DeMille, who always had a keen way of saying things, he says, I think it's wonderful, buy yourself a big TV, and then break that glass and put a shas in there. But these were the challenges, TV, you know, people watching it, yeah. What was the problem with TV? What was the problem with TV? It's interesting, I forgot who it was, once social commentator said, If TV had been invented before radio, they would have said, I'm so glad someone figured out some way to get rid of the picture. Yeah? What does that mean? That means that in the 1960s, as a young man, I read Lord of the Rings by J.R.R. Tolkien, and they made it into movies. Someone said, oh, did you ever see the movies? I said, why? I said, the man wrote 30,000 years of back history before the story starts. How are you doing that in a movie? And I said, there's nothing they could possibly put into this movie that can do justice to the book because it exists inside of my head. But once you start watching something, the visions take over your head. They've done this. They've done studies about violence and the murders and how many things that people watch and torture, and how it then affects people just from seeing it. Because, you know, when you see something, it goes straight into your brain, you remember it forever. And those images stay in your head forever. There's no way to get rid of them. That's it. They stay forever. But whereas, if you read something, you know, etc., that doesn't mean that everything is worth reading either, but it just means that at least you have the opportunity that you are a participant. By television, when you're watching something, it's just going into you, you know? That's how I described what COVID was. COVID was basically a six-month airline flight with turbulence. You sat in your seat, you watched TV, you watched movies, and they brought you food. That was it. Stay there for 6 months and couldn't do anything else, you know what I mean? And you just sit there watching. And I saw many of my friends in school, you know, that they did three things. They watched TV, they talked about what they saw on TV, and they discussed what they were going to watch on TV. Right? Now, of course, that's the old days. I'm talking about the television, you know? Now, people sit down and binge watch, you know, 8 seasons of something. They get up to go to the bathroom, you know, they have some food, you know. That's not really true. Some people get like, it depends, and they just sit there. They don't want to move. They're just stuck in watching it over and over and over and over again, you know? And that's one of the great things about Netflix is you don't even have to click, it just moves on to the next one. And just keep going and going and going, and you just take it in and it takes over your life. Yeah? To the point that people would prefer to watch something than to actually do something. And this has been documented that people who spend a lot of time online end up not being capable of real life relationships because they've suckered themselves into these things. A guy told me, if you've never read Harry Potter, it's a spoiler alert, you know, so a couple of years at this point. But Dumbledore dies in book 6. A guy says to me, on Tisha B'av, because it came out just before Tisha B'av, he says to me, I cried when Dumbledore died. I didn't cry when my grandfather died. I said, of course not, because you were more emotionally invested in Dumbledore than your grandfather. How much time did you spend with your grandfather? Like, Dumbledore was much part of your life. So this make-believe illusion starts to take us over. And that was television. But okay, television, you know, I was going to say there's only so much you can do with it, but we know that's not true. Anyone who's ever stayed up at 3 o'clock in the morning watching the ads for the truckers at school, yes, you can learn to drive the big rig. Mary Tyler Moore reruns it at 2 o'clock
in the morning. I do. I know that.
You want to be a model or just look like one? I was at school. Anyway, so it just never ends. You just sit there and you just keep watching. That was when there was TV. Oh. Then they came up, of course, with, you know, video recorders, DVDs. You could sit there and watch whatever you wanted over and over again, you know? And you could record it, you could this, yeah. This guy comes to the rabbi and he says, Rabbi, I don't know what to do because I'm a big Yankee fan in the 7th game of the World Series. This is when the Yankees used to be in the World Series. The 7th game of the World Series comes out on Yom Kippur. So he says, okay, that's why there are video recorders. He says, I can record Kol Nidre? it's like this, you know. So Rabbi Dr. Gottlieb who's also much smarter than I am, and he's a professor of philosophy. And when I used to teach Horace Mack, I used to tell the guys, don't start up with him because he'll prove you don't exist and you won't know what to do. he said he used to go to South Africa, before they had television. South Africa was a very conservative country. They didn't allow on television. He says, you could not compare a South African student to an American student. They were so deeper, so much more intellectual, so much, He says, and when they got television, 2 years later, they were on the same level. It broke them from being able to concentrate. So, I remember they did a study in the 1950s, I remember reading this in the 1960s, that the teacher has to make their class in 12-minute units because people can't concentrate for more than 12 minutes. Why? Because that's the time in between commercials. So people have trained themselves to concentrate 12 minutes and then commercial and then go back in. They don't know how to concentrate for less than that. That was back in the 1950s. Today, who watches a show with commercials? You just keep watching, and usually, you're watching three or four different things at the same time. So you're watching two movies, three TV shows, two sport games, and a Japanese cooking show, and you go back and forth between them. And, to the point where the average attention span of a kid is somewhere between 3 and 5 seconds. And I know this because, if you ever read your stats, if you have a website, how long people engage to try to hold people's attention. You know what I mean? I do a podcast that's 45 minutes, people say, you're crazy. And they take out a minute of it, and they put it on meaningful minute. 3 minutes of ads, and then 1 minute of me going, it's a great story, out of time. Anyway, so, people can't concentrate. People have lost that ability because they're suffering from overload, right? It's just a reality, So, that was bad. That was bad. So TV was bad, and then cable TV was bad, movies were bad, Oh, halavai for the good old days. Then they came out with, cell phones. And I know grandchildren say to me, you can't live today without a phone. And I would say, I think I can argue that for the majority of the 5,800 years of human history, most of those time we lived without a cell phone. I would say it's probably only the past 100 years. Certainly, 200 years ago, there were no phones. And people managed. And that's why when I came to learn here in Israel the first time in 1975, which according to my revised biography was 6 years before I was born, because I think if Superman can keep getting a reboot, so can I. Anyway, so to make a phone call to America, it was like $7 a minute. You had to go down to the central post office, and pay $100. It was ridiculous. No, you would write a letter and you would send it, and it would take 2 weeks to get there and 2 weeks to get back. And by then you don't remember what you said. You don't know what the ads rang. It made no difference. You had a year to become a person, to grow up. The same week, I'll never forget this. The same week that the Gedolei Torah came out with their takanas against cell phones, Psychology Today had as their cover story how cell phones are destroying American college students. Psychology Today. And they talked about how you used to send somebody off to college and they would learn to grow up. And now, the guy says, I was working on campus and I hear somebody on the phone with their mother. He goes, I was at lunch there. They only had chocolate ice cream. They didn't have any vanilla ice cream. You got to call your mommy and tell her about the ice cream. It's okay. You'll manage, I don't have a smartphone in Israel, So I say, how do I get there? They say, do you have Waze? I said, no, I have this thing called a pencil. It comes with a piece of paper, and I can write down the direction. I said, I don't know. Someone loses their cell phone, they don't know how to reach anybody in the world, because they don't know anybody's number, Because I put it in the phone, and then I forget about it forever, Push the person's name, or whatever thing I have to remember the person by. But guy I met in the Rover. You know what I'm saying? So, I don't even know the guy's name, you know? I've known this guy for 3 years, and I just keep bluffing. I'm always afraid that at some point, you know, I'm hoping somebody will call him by his name, and I'll know who he is. You know? You try to sometimes some people have their names on their yarmulkes, right? It doesn't always work, so you say, hi, Yossi, you know, what? Yossi, you mean my brother? Yeah, that's what I meant. How's your brother Yossi? Hey, Yerushalayim, how's it going? So nobody knows anything. People are like, hey, okay. So back then, it was a distraction. For years, I managed not to have a cell phone. For years. My wife was pressuring me terribly. I said, why do I want a cell phone? She goes, then people could reach you anywhere at any time. I said, okay, go over this with me again. Why do I want a cell phone? What do I need it for? You know? Then I broke down on the Jerusalem highway with my mother in the car. There is no man in this world who can stand up to both a wife and a mother. Just have an event. Understand? You know? So I got myself a cell phone. And now I can tell you, having had this cell phone for years, I would say somewhere between 98 and 99.5% of the phone calls are unnecessary. No, you need in case of an emergency. Why? Netanyahu's calling me for advice? Who's calling me? What are you talking about? You know, 9 out of 10 times is nothing. Or it's one of those announcements. Shalom! Anshei Beita, Hayom Yeh Mutsa, you know, it's like, who's calling me already? That's so important that I have to stop what I'm doing. And how many people get into accidents and this? I saw a video once, it was frightening, of all these people who got into these accidents and killed people or maimed people because they were texting. They were texting while they were driving, you know what I mean? It's unbelievable. But my social media, everybody knows it. I can always tell when someone's on their cell phone. I can always tell, because you see that they're driving at about 20 miles an hour and drifting to the right. It's always a sign they're on their cell phone. You know what I mean? And I checked it every time, People were distracted, you know? But okay, what was the worst that would happen? So it came with a game. Snake, you know? You can hear all the yeshiva guys in the bathroom. You hear this beeping going on. You know, we're all playing Snake. That was the one game. And it was a pretty chaloshitik game. You know what I mean? But that was it, you know? And then they moved up slowly as fast as possible. Yeah? I'll never forget, there's a rope. And he's, you know, now when I was a kid, I used to watch, I used to read comic books for information on the scientific principle. But anyway, so he said to me, they made a movie out of Iron Man. I said, why? He was like the most nebuch superhero ever. Nobody cared about Iron Man, you know what I mean? So he said, oh, it's unbelievable. You have to see this scene. And he pulls out his phone. And I'm looking for this guy flying in this tiny little window. I said, why would you do this? If I forced you to live in an area this big, you would go to court for a cruel and unusual punishment. My entire world has been reduced to a window this size. But people are doing it willingly. And as time came on, they figured out, and there's been study after study done on this, that it's all designed to sucker you in. So, this story is 10 years old. This is before things were as advanced today. They did a study around the world. A study around the world of 1,000 college students, not Jewish. It was a secular thing. And they got them to sign an agreement, and they took them off of all of their technology, if you can imagine such a thing. All of their technology. This girl meets a friend and says, you know, I haven't seen you online. He goes, I got rid of my internet, got rid of my email, got rid of everything. I'm disconnected. So what do you do? What do you mean? Now I have a life. He says, can I use it in Candy Crush? And then, like, you know, that's the best I can imagine with it. It's a game. It's like Snake. So they took them off of it. They studied these people and saw them going through the same withdrawal symptoms as somebody coming off of cocaine and heroin. When people say, I'm addicted to my phone, they're not kidding. It is an addiction. That's why there was an article in the Jewish Week 15 years ago about these kids who keep what's called half Shabbos. Anybody ever hear this phrase? Have Shabbos means I keep Shabbos, but I text, I go on the internet, I can't. I'm an addict. I can't help myself. You know, whether that argument works in Olam Haba or not, that's going to be between you and God. I don't know. But they're not kidding. It's an addiction. They can't stop. You know? The guy gets up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom and comes back and checks his email. You know what I mean? Like, come on. You know, who's writing you already? Who's contacting you? Who's trying to reach you? You know? But I just can't. I can't put it down. And you see people with their phone, you know, and they put it down in front of them. And it doesn't even ring. Every now and then they pick it up. There's a check. Maybe somebody texted me. I'm sure you've seen this. I'm not choshing anybody here ever did it. But I'm sure you've seen this. When someone's in the shul, the cell phone goes off. Okay, so there's a few firms that go, no, no. You know what I'm saying? He takes out the phone. And he doesn't turn it off. Looks at it. See who's calling? Sorry, God. Might be somebody important. Okay. That's bad. But I have seen the following many times. Why? Because they want to shtach God? They're not trying to shtach God. They're addicted. They can't help themselves. They push it, can't help themselves. It's a nebuch to watch. You know? And if you've seen this, you know I am not exaggerating. It's gotten... Have you ever seen this at the Kaisel? I've seen it at the Kaisel. Somebody goes over to the Kaisel, takes out a cell phone, calls someone, puts it up against the wall. Guy can't make it to the Kaisel, but he'll talk. You know, yeah. Put the phone up. You know? Sheesh. So you tell people, disconnect. Okay, tell people, disconnect. You know? Tell people, you know. I remember a guy, more than once people have spoken to me about a particular bearer that guys sometimes have a problem with, you know? And needless to say, cell phones don't help. But, you know, so he says, I went to my mashkiach, you know, it was so embarrassing, and I told him I had this problem. So what did he say? Stop. Shkoya! I could be a mashkiach. Don't do it anymore. Oh, okay. You know? Don't you understand I have a problem? Do you have a solution for me? So what happens? The answer is, how do you make that conscious? How do you stop it? How do you stop an addiction? You know? So there is only one way, if you know anything about addiction. Those of you who've gone through drug rehab, and I'm sure there's many here, but not me. I feel like rehab is for quitters. But anyway, thank you very much. There's a reason I get paid the big bucks. But anyway, so you know the fact is that you know there's nothing you do. You have to get rid of the phone. That's it, you know? And people say to me, how come you never opened the yeshiva? How come you never opened the seminary? I said, because nobody would come. I did have an idea once of opening a seminary. You know, I figured I do have a certain popularity there. And like all these seminaries, they charge $100 application fee. And I just keep the application fee and never open, you know what I mean? I said, nobody would come. Because I would want to give a bachur the experience that I had in Eretz Yisrael in 1975 when I came here to sit and learn. Right? Which is, you want to write letters home? Fine. There was a, you know, when I was in yeshiva in Queens, they had cell phones, pay phones, you know, etc. You know? And, you know, that's a very inexact science because people were sitting there waiting to make a call and the phone rings and if I answer it, then I have to run to the base manager and find the guy. You know, so this one guy was waiting for a call and the phone rings. He says, hi, could you get me, Goldberg? He says, no, I can't. I'm waiting for a call. You know, don't type the line. He says, you know who this is? He says, no. He says, it's the Rosh Hashiva. Bacher says, you know who this is? He says, no. He says, good. It's an inexact science. You know, but give
give people a chance to grow up. Give people a chance to have a year in Israel. You know? It used to be, like I told you, you spent 2 weeks to get a letter, 2 weeks to get a letter back. And I mean, you had to learn to grow up and rely on yourself a little bit. Now, if you have WhatsApp, and you WhatsApp somebody, and you watch to see if the check turns blue. Because now you know they saw it, and they're not answering you on purpose. And then you write back in capitals. Which is the equivalent of screaming at the top of your lungs. Why aren't you answering me? 4 exclamation marks! Angry smiley face. A little tired of the sauce there. But anyway, so, you know, why? Because I need an answer now. You know, listen. And don't anyone take this the wrong way. Chas v'shalom, I don't mean to cast any aspersions. I've been accused of casting aspersions. I don't want to cast aspersions because, you know me, a bad word would never leave my lips or anything negative. And anyone who says that, I'm going to find you and kill you. Anyway, but when I was growing up, you had to learn. Learning was very hard. There's no vowels. It's in Aramaic. My conversational Aramaic is not as good as it should be. You know what I mean? There's no punctuation. You know, we didn't even have the Dira Masko of Rashi in bold. You know what I mean? So they gave you a Jastrow dictionary. There is not one word in the Gemara that's in the Jastrow dictionary. It helps if you could conjugate Aramaic. If you could conjugate Aramaic, I wouldn't need your stupid dictionary, okay? So if you wanted to, they had a Sansino. Half of it's in Latin. A fiori ipso facto, e pluribus unum, you know, ex nihilo. It was like, so it gave you a motivation to learn Aramaic, you know? And then they came out with the art school, which is user friendly. Gemara was never meant to be user friendly, it was meant to be user hard, so that you can learn the skills and work at it. So sometimes, you know, even a person who's breaking his teeth through learning a piece of Gemara, you know, so you come to some gadata or something, and you can't figure it out, so you look at him in the art school. But it sucks you in, because it's so easy. And you start going, oh my gosh, oh, look at this. Oh, look at this. I'm in base. And it's got charts and diagrams and maps and pop-ups, you know what I mean?
Can you help the Meraglim find their way back there?
Why? Because nobody wants to work. Nobody wants to work. You know, the average guy walks into Shir and is like, okay, Rebbe, let's see if you have anything to say that might interest me. And, but to struggle? So nobody wants to struggle. It's really easy. So therefore, if my relationships are online and I just watch movies and I do nothing, it's unbelievable. So if I was to get rid of my phone, it would change my life. But people are addicted. They're terrified to do it. And what do the Chachamim do? So you come out and you say, against texting. Who texts? You know? I heard this comedian 30 years ago. He says, my parents have phones, but they use it to make phone calls. That's an app on my phone. And I don't even like it when you use it. You should have first WhatsApp me to see if you could call me. You understand? Because, you know, and people are there, and there's so much stuff going on, and people are always checking the news, nothing has happened in 6 years. They're checking the news. Joe Biden is dementia. Checking the news. Donald Trump says mean things. Checking the news, you know what I mean? DeSantis has no personality. I'm checking the news, and I'm reading, right? There's nothing there. Nothing has happened. But they're addicted, they can't stop. You know, put it down. They're always picking it up and checking. They want to see. Things are beeping. Things are this. So they said, no texting. Texting. I said, okay, no internet. No internet. What are you talking about? It's impossible. Yeah, today you can't look at the internet. Okay, we'll know this. And by the time you're done, the technology keeps moving. You can't make laws fast enough to keep up with it. So, people have asked me, and they said to me, how does one manage technology? I said, beats me. If you figure it out, let me know. I'll make a lot of money telling people. I don't know how. It's an addiction. You know, it used to be like when I was a kid, they would say, we have a television, but we tell the children 1 hour a night. Yeah. Yeah. Whoever watched 1 hour of educational television. You know what I mean? Of course not. You go from one to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next, and that's how it is. It's set up that way. It's designed as a leader to get you to the next thing, the next thing. And that's why everything on the internet is set up for you to push this button and take you this and take you here and take you there and take you this, you know? So the biggest problem, in my opinion, is the addiction. That's the biggest problem. But the two problems that need to be addressed, yeah? The first one is the porn, which I don't want to talk about in the base message, but I just have to tell you one story. I'll tell you two stories. Yeah? The first story was before the internet. This guy was teaching in a particular town someplace in North America. I won't mention where, because I used to tell the town, and people said it might be Lashon Hara in the town, and it is, but it deserves it. But anyway, but I won't tell you. Fine. You know? And he says, the parents came for parent teachers. And he says to the mother, he says, you gave your kid a car? He says, yeah, public transportation is not good. You have to get around, you need a car. He says, you give him a credit card? He says, yeah, he has to buy gas, has to pay for expenses, you know what I mean? And he says, you give him cash? He says, not everybody takes a credit card. He says, you ever check the credit card receipts? He says, no, it will break the trust that I have with my son. Do you ever ask him to account for the money? No, I'm sure he's responsible, you know? Does he have a curfew? Yeah. Can he sleep out at someone's house? Yeah. Do you ever call that house to see if he's there? So he says, no, we'll break the trust. So he turns to the father, says, you're 17 years old. You have a car, cash, and a credit card. No one's going to check up on you. Where would you be? Now, I'm in a base message. I won't tell you what the father said, but the mother slapped him and left. Okay? So I'm sure with our imaginations, we can fill in the rest. You understand? Yeah, that's story number one. That was before it was before. A guy tells me, he's in a good yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, a nice yeshiva, one of the many, many mir prep schools, you know what I mean? Like, you know, so that you go here and then eventually you go to the mir, and soon you won't have to because the mir keeps buying your buildings, and eventually you can stay right where you are and you'll be in the mir. Take you in. But, you know, I'm two houses away from the mir right now, and then another week I'll be in the mir. But anyhow, he says, you know, I was in high school. This story's easily 15 years old, maybe 20, but definitely 15 years old. He says, and I had to write reports and do homework, and I needed the internet, and my father would keep the internet on one computer in the living room, he'd go that and you. And I said, Tom, it's hard for me, I have to go all the way downstairs and write these reports, sometimes late at night, then I have to schlep upstairs, you know, why can't I get it on my computer upstairs? He says, you know, because, you know, there's problems with it. He said, good, you know, come on. So he says, okay. He thinks about it, he says, okay, but I expect you to act when you're bent over. I said, so what'd you do? Says, what do you think, I'm crazy? I watch porn every night. Because that's called normal. You know, a guy who, you know, has a telescope, and instead of looking in the neighbor's windows and watching the stars, okay, you wonder, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's a kind of, I forgot which Rebbe it is, the famous story where there's a Rebbe where he says, people are crazy, they're dancing with the women and they're eating pig. That's not crazy. If they were dancing with the pigs and eating women, that's crazy. This is called taiva. This is natural. So given the opportunity of looking at things that are in a... Don't believe me. Do what I do. I am an observant Jew. I observe people. Yeah? Watch the average yeshiva guy when, here in the old city, some tourist is walking down the street not dressed appropriately. Just watch the guys. What do they look like? Just follow them. I get a lot of entertainment from this. When I used to go on the bus, I sit in the back of the bus, and watch the yeshiva guys, and every now and then you see them going through the window. They're like climbing out the window. It's normal. It's normal. So what's the answer? The Shemir Seinayim is a very serious thing. But when you got it in your hand, and it's right there, and it's popping up, and you can't always control what's coming up on that screen, you think it doesn't happen. Okay. But Matas Yael Solomon had a meeting in Pesed with the Rabbonim. And he says, the porn is a big problem, but it's not the biggest problem. It's not the biggest problem. He says, because at least when a person's watching porn, he knows he's doing something wrong. He says, the biggest problem is the kefirah. People go into these websites. People go into these chat rooms, people go into these podcasts, TikTok videos, I don't know what they are today, you know, there's so many terms, you know. And they watch these people, machoizik of Yahadus, machoizik of Torah, and it's all leitzanis. It's designed for leitzanis. That's the purpose of it. And that's the Rashi at the beginning of Parshas Korach, where he says, go look in the Tanchuma. The Tanchuma describes how Korach was able to wrest Klal Yisrael away from Moshe Rabbeinu. Leitzanis. And he made fun, and he machoizik, and he did this, and he did that, you know. And it makes a toll. Once you've laughed at something, you don't look at it as seriously. And it stays with you, you know? A friend of mine, he had a student, and she was dating this guy, he was apparently a firm guy, and he tells her at one point, listen, I'm really a kofel. She's like, what? You know, you're learning yeshiva? He goes, I know, I'm really a kofel. And read this book and you'll see why. It was a book written by a conservative rabbi called Like a Driven Leaf, which is a novelization of the life of Elisha ben Avuya, Achim. And she says, I don't know what to do with this. So she gives it to this rabbi friend of mine, and he reads it and goes, I don't know what to do with it. I mean, it's overwhelming. I said, let me read it. I read it, I wrote a whole review, and I took it apart piece by piece. She says, how do you do that? I said, because I'm a cynic. I'm cynical about everything. And so if I read something, I wanna see what's your argument, where's it coming from? The emperor has no clothes, you know, I will point it out. Where is this coming from? What's motivating this? Yeah? And I was able to detach, but most people can't. I told this story to a guy in his 40s who was still learning in the mirror, and he said to me, I read that book as a teenager, and I never got back the Emunas Chachamim I lost. So, people sit there and read these things, Machin Chayzik of Torah, Machin Chayzik of the Chachamim, Machin Chayzik of the Gedolei Torah, Machin Chayzik of everything, and now they're laughing at everything behind their back. I have met conservatively, probably more, but I was just trying to put it together in my head, at least six people today that I've met in the past 10 years. One is a Rebbe Mishul, one is a Mashkiach and Yeshiva, one is a Cheder Rebbe, one guy's learning in Kollel, I forgot what the other two did. And they all told me, we're kofel. We read this stuff online, destroyed our moon, and it's not being presented fairly, and there's no discussion, and it's just machin chayzik and making fun. And they said, we're kofel, we don't believe in it. I said, so why are you doing this? Because I don't know how to do anything else. So I'm still here. I'm living a firm life, but I don't believe anything. I don't keep anything in my own life, and no one's looking, and I don't believe anything. And as Matas Joel Solomon said, that's the biggest problem, is the fear that people are being exposed to. So, Rabbeisai, I'm on a fool's errand. I know that. Yeah? I'm Don Quixote tilting at windmills. Yeah? I know that at the end of this discussion, if one guy says, you know, Rabbi Olomsky's right, I'm going to get rid of my phone. You understand? I will make a kiddush. Yeah, I'll make a kiddush for that guy, not for everybody. If you all get rid of your phones, I'll make it for the whole yeshiva. What do you think about that? And it'll come right out of Richard's pocket. But but if one guy does it, I will be shocked. Because most people will say, you know, he's right. Anyway, let's see what's going on. Because it's an addiction. I'm not going to get someone to quit smoking because I gave a really inspirational speech. But the yeshiva is going to try to make some gedarim, make some takanas, try to set things up. Why? Because they care about your soul. The United Negro College Fund, at least they have an expression, I don't know if they still use it. It used to be called, a mind is a terrible thing to waste. And here we say, a neshama is a terrible thing to waste. When you get to Olam Haba, you'll feel pretty bad when you don't have one. Because you really need it. It comes in handy when you're in Olam Haba. Now you don't need it so much because you got your phone. When you get up there, you can't take your phone with you. You understand? Although they're talking about implanting a chip now. Yeah. Elon Musk is working on this, so maybe you can still have it up there. But we're talking about mamish saving your soul, saving your spirituality. So, Rabbi Yossi, I give you a bracha. I'm a Kohen, I do this professionally. I get 2% off the top. I give you a bracha. That, and you know, sometimes people would talk to me on Purim, they want to have brachas, you know. And then I give them some kind of standard bracha. You know, Chaim Kanievsky used to just say, you know, bracha v'atzlacha. After a while, so many people came, it was too long, he would say bua. The Rosh Hashanah was bracha v'atzlacha. So a guy raised a lot of money for one of his stuckers, and he asked him for a bracha, so he says bua. He says, you know, Rebbe, I put in a lot of money, I thought I was going to get a longer bracha than that. He goes, bua. So I give most people a standard bracha. But if I see there's somebody who's really serious, who's a mevakesh, and that's something rare in our generation to find a mevakesh, and that's why, you know, when I heard I was going to be speaking over here, I was very excited because everyone knows this is the issue of mevakesh, because most people are not coming from communities where they're saying, you know, I'm going where all my friends are going. You know, Burgos of Torah. You know, it's like, you know, none of this is. It's a very special subset of Klai Yisrael. So I was saying, I'm talking to the Mavakshin, you know what I mean? But a person who's a Mavakesh turns around and says, what is the best thing that I can do with my life? What's the best thing I can do with my time? And if I turn around at the end of my life and I can say, you know, I lived a life that was worth living. I did something special. That says it all. So boys, I give you so people come and if I can see they're in the back age, I give them a very special book. And I told them, I said, I'm afraid to give this, but I don't know what to give. I said, you should, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give you the ability to know what you should do in this world and the strength to fulfill. Because there are a lot of people who figure out what they should do, but they don't want it, because it's too hard. And so, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give you the strength that you should all understand what's the best thing to do for your Yerushalayim, for your learning, for your sanity, for your soul, for your psychological well-being, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give you the strength to have the integrity to follow through.
Amen. Amen.